This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Hey there, Villa fans. This is the voice of your god, Randy Lerner. 3-1 to the Bristol City Slickers. I'm proud to say I taught the Dr. Tony everything he knows.
We're in hell right now, gentlemen. Believe me. And we can stay here, get the shit kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. So, it's time to start the season proper. The transfer window's closed, players are in place. Let's do this. Did you manage to get through the international break okay? It's actually not been so bad in Birmingham because Steven Spielberg's been in town shooting on the mean streets of Birmingham his latest film Ready Player One. I don't know if any of you have actually been down to check it out. I've been down a couple of times. It's, you know, it's been kind of quite interesting. A few car chases and that kind of stuff up around the jewellery quarter. I'm a kind of a semi-retired film journalist, so I used to go on a lot of film sets and do interviews. Been on like Bourne Supremacy, Thor, 28 Weeks Later, Hitchhikers Go to the Galaxy, the remake of Clash of the Titans, Alexander, Tomb Raider 2, and loads of films I can't even remember the names of. I think the last thing I went on was Maleficent, the Angelina Jolie film, so I got to see her suspended on a wire, wearing yellow contacts, horns, and dressed in a skin-tight black PVC outfit, which you don't want to know about that. You want to know about the Villa, don't you? Anyway, on this show, we'll be catching up on the latest movements at Villa Park. Jack Grealish getting his new contract, Gordon Cowan's leaving the club, and Steve Round coming in as technical director, so we'll be discussing the implications of that. We'll also have another look at the fan consultation group that I was part of that met Dr. Tony, and there's a few things spinning out of that. And then we'll, of course, look at the doubleheader at Villa Park against Forest and Brentford. If you want to support the show, go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon and check it out for how you can sign up and really be a part of the inner circle. Anyway, enough with the formalities. Let's get cracking. And joining me on the show, we're still waiting for the glorious return of Chad Wren. So in the meantime, you'll have to make do with me and Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome, Dan.
Hello there.
So, did you see it? Did you see it? The biggest news probably of the week. Tonev's goal for Bulgaria in injury time against Luxembourg. Did you see it?
I did, and should I comment? I mean, there's surely some match-fixing investigation ongoing. I don't know what... Did you have money on it?
No, but it's a bloody good goal, though. So,
well, sooner or later, one of them was going to come off, wasn't it?
I think he's on a drought of... I think it's 3 years he hasn't scored a goal for any club. But when you see that goal, I mean, that was like... I think he scores a goal once every 3 years just for the YouTube compilation for when he tries to join another club. Anyway, speaking of ex-players, funny enough, we were talking in the last episode, the summer transfer window special, about a club buying another player to make an existing player happy. We were talking about Adama and AU. But I noticed that Jonathan Benteke has been signed by Palace, basically to keep Christian Benteke sweet. And funny enough, I think on My Old Man Said, I wrote about this about 2 years ago, that we should just buy him because he was going cheap. He's not like the greatest centre forward in the world, but he's scored a few decent goals. Yeah, maybe that was a trick we missed out on in terms of keeping Benteke, would be to like chain up his brother Jonathan underneath the Holt End and so we could blackmail him to stay.
I'd have been happy if we'd have signed anyone to keep Benteke, really, rather than giving in to Liverpool so they could break him and then sell him to Palace a year later. I'd have took Trevor, Brian and Keith Benteke, as long as we'd have kept him.
I didn't know he had so many brothers.
Yeah, little man.
Speaking of ex-players, just an update, quick update. Charles Lifestyling Zogbia still doesn't have a club, well, at the time that we recorded this. Somebody who's staying with the club a bit longer, Jack Grealish signed a new contract. What do you think of that, Dan?
Yeah, good. It's another one of those. Deserved, I suppose. I didn't realise the trigger was less performance, more to do with 20 games having been played. So that's a bit of an interesting one. The trigger was 20 league starts.
All right, for a new contract.
So, I mean, I do think he's been a lot better this season. Couldn't have been much worse than last, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's too early to make any judgment on Grealish at the moment. But I think so far this season he's moving in the direction. Once the whole team starts moving in the right direction, I think he will flourish with them.
I think he will. It sort of harks back to the weird contract arrangements of the old regime, though, rather than rewarding, you know, the incentivizing, sorry, him to, I don't know, so many assists or so many games. We reward on the basis of 20 league games, which seems a strange figure, but.
I mean, when you think about it in the context of him being an academy player, I mean, I don't know how old... It wasn't that long ago since he signed the initial contract.
No, it's only a two-year extension on top, so that must have been that's the kicker, right. Isn't it, the 20 game?
Yeah, I suppose not many academy players get past the 20 mark. Normally, at tops, they'll do three or five before they're loaned out and then potentially moved on. So I suppose it's just a kind of a light safety clause, isn't it,
on the
club's point of view. In other news, a legend in my lifetime especially, Gordon Cowans has finally left the club. Has he been coaching for like 18 years since playing?
I think it's a 40-year association, isn't it, that they're saying, playing in, which is a lifetime, literally.
Which is pretty incredible. During my time as a kid, circa the league champions, European, when he was a teenager doing all this, winning all these trophies, and he was ever present in the 81 team. And, you know, he's one of the reasons I really got into Villa watching him. He was kind of like poetry in motion. I mean, I remember there was Glenn Hoddle and Gordon Cowans. They offered a complete different way of playing football, this kind of grace, almost like playing in slow motion, and everything was measured. And literally, it's where pulling the strings, that term comes from, is what Cowans could do. A lot of people wanted him to be Villa manager. I think what they didn't realise is you have to have a personality for that. And I think Cowans was more of the kind of quiet kind of guy. Kind of goes to show, you know, where youth and the academy were his kind of forte. And that's probably... Probably didn't want to get involved in a lot of the bullshit of the senior game.
Probably not a bad thing, because reputations can be easily tarnished, can't they, with management and the like, you know. I mean, I know Little's back in the fold now, but the player remembered for being great, you know, ultimately, yeah, led us to a League Cup. But, you know, managers get sacked, and I suppose Gordon Cowans will always be free of that. I mean, I only ever saw him in the twilight of his career, but, you know, 500 appearances, English League championship, European champion, as champions of England, speaks for itself, really, doesn't it?
There's a few people calling out that there should be some kind of, whether it's a testimonial or some kind of celebration. I think he's definitely kind of should celebrate the 82 team in terms of their achievement as a team. But if there was an individual, just because of that length of service that you just mentioned, that's something that should be considered by the annals of power at Villa Park, because there isn't enough celebrating the history, and there should be more effort. For example, you go to the Emirates and there's statues of bloody everybody, Bergkamp,
Remy Gard.
If you haven't seen the Remy Gard statue outside the Emirates, that's because it's just come up now for this year in the Premier League, so you're not going to see it this year unless we play them in the FA Cup. But hopefully next season we'll get to take photos and selfies in front of the Remy Gard statue at the Emirates. So it looks like it's linked to Steve Round coming in as the technical director. I mean, obviously, this is completely speculation and we don't know the ins and outs of what Steve Round is actually putting into motion at the moment. But this is kind of pantomime where you think, oh, Garrett Gordon-Cowan's a legend. Ah, he's left because of Steve Round. So Steve Round's a bad guy. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of modernization going on at Villa Park now. So obviously it's linked, but what can we say about it, really?
Just speculation. I think there's two things. It's interesting how Pat Murthy from the BBC and both the owner as well have come out quite quickly, almost in tandem, to say, oh, it's not connected to Steve Round coming into the club. I mean, the fact is Cairns leaves his post alongside two or three other key development people behind the scenes. Was that instigated by Round? I doubt it. Has the change come about as a result of... we've talked about broad organisational change that's been needed behind the scenes at Villa for a long time. That's probably what's going on. Seems to be, from the sounds that are coming out of the club, that Gordon wasn't particularly bothered, in the sense that he's 58 and he's quite happy to sit and watch the club, you know. And I imagine that is the case. You know, he's had a great career. Sometimes it's time to move on. And, you know, no hard feelings, really, I guess.
Yeah, well, hopefully we, in a few seasons' time, when we're starting to think about... once we're back where we belong and we're starting to think about doing more with the history, we can do something with Cowans in terms of honouring his contribution to the club. Just quickly on Steve Round, I spoke to Keith Wyness at the fan consultation group about Steve Round, and he seemed, you know, very chuffed about the appointment, and also said he'd had a few calls from other clubs or people at other clubs saying that he'd done a good thing, and, you know, almost like a telephone pat on the back, saying that he's a top man, as in he's still young, is he 45? So he's well thought of within the football industry. But I mean, we'll see what happens. He's got a big undertaking. He's, as I said before a couple of podcasts ago, he's got to redefine what Aston Villa is and incorporate a style, and also a through line, a kind of ethos to be carried on regardless of what the manager is.
I mean, I think that's the key thing, isn't it? That we've lacked that continuity through the club, through the modern era, I guess. It's interesting because Wyness will have worked with Round when he was at Everton. So
indeed,
there is a relationship there. Round has been on, I think, a sort of an upward trajectory. It's my interpretation anyway. He's been doing various background and coaching type roles, and he's sort of been graduating up the inner more technical roles within football clubs. You know, he's done the educational bit, if you like, the master's thing last year, and then that sets him up for sort of the first directorship type role of, I mean, it's a major role for us as a football club, because he's got genuine behind the scenes control about instilling this way of playing and different ways of working and change.
Because it was interesting that he's obviously pitched himself and he had a plan of where he wanted to go. And, you know, he refused the assistant manager job to Remy Gard.
I think that the huge positive from my point of view is that one of the obvious criticisms under Lerner and Fox is that though we had figures in place, we still appear quite rudderless. You know, when a manager came in and there were issues repeatedly, you know, be it Lambert, be it Sherwood, be it Gard, we lack continuity between managers, and this can only, an extra stabilising figure... You know, this guy's got something to prove as well. It can only be a good thing.
Well, Fox's plan was, you know, it's essentially the same as the Henrik Almstead, and Paddy Riley was essentially facilitating the same role. That was the infrastructure they were kind of going for as well, to get this kind of through line. So Villa weren't so dependent on whatever the particular manager at the time, you know, had in store or had in his, you know, had in his mind. So it's not just stop starting all the time every time a new manager comes along. But that obviously went tits up.
Say the least. I mean, there's a bit of a correlation here, really. I think that, you know, Rayan's been sat out in, well, not sat out, he's been working out in Dubai doing the old motivational speaking. And that was where Almstadt met his fate, wasn't it? Where he was took a sneaky holiday. And then when he got off the plane, he got sacked, didn't he, in Birmingham? So it's interesting, you know, when we, you know, linking into the fan consultation minutes and what's been put out through the media, one of the key areas is of the technical director role is youth development. So I think the distancing perhaps of Tony's comments and that of Pat Murphy, maybe having thought about it a bit more, maybe there is a little bit more to the Cairns thing, that Rayan perhaps does need that oversight and maybe a fresh pair of eyes across things. The other elephant in the room is we haven't produced a lot of quality from the academy over the years.
Well, saying that, we were European champions going back a few years, but that seems to have all dissipated. I mean, it's no guarantee if you have a world-beating team. I mean, just look at the amount of youth players that the likes of Chelsea and Manchester City are stockpiling, and those guys, their careers are potentially in limbo unless they get the right club where they're given a real crack and they really do impress to actually wave a flag to get noticed by their mother club. But yeah, the actual benefits haven't been that great, considering how acclaimed the Villa Academy has been going back a couple of years.
I think that's the other point, isn't it? There might be a broader conversation there about the flawed academy system in England, really. You know, you have to look at the state of the depth in the national team to see there's issues there. But closer to home, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me. And it's a question that's, you know, not really been far away on my blog. I can't understand how we can't draw a circle around Villa Park of so many miles and we can't find 11 great footballers or good footballers, you know, and develop them into, you know, the very least squad players. We seem to get dribs and drabs, don't we, where we get players who are promising, who we think, he might come to something, or he might be the one. And so few of them come to anything of note. I think we spoke previously where there's a clutch of players in and around the Championship. You know, now I think we've come across Hogg recently with Huddersfield. Whittingham for a number of years was a good quality player for Cardiff in the Championship consistently.
The academy is churning out a quota of Championship level players for sure.
Yeah, but there's been so few who even genuinely you could say that they could go on to be top Premier League footballers.
Well, you know, a few of them have made it. Cahill, Davis. Davis, captain of his international team, Cahill, European.
Cahill was plucked from, I think, Sheffield Wednesday quite young.
Yeah.
And I always think that a lot of people reference Barry, who was actually plucked from Brighton at 16. So, you know, I don't want to be disparaging of our academy system. I'm sure they try very hard, but a rethink on reflection probably isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Welcome to Jedinak's Jungle. You join me this week from the wilds of Aston. This is a barren, dark place. Even the local guides don't venture out after dark without a rifle. It's been a hard week. Losing to Bristol? What a bunch of drongos. But what have we here? A real treat for you guys this week. A tricky little critter. But don't be alarmed. It's no threat. It's a beautiful Carlis Hill. Oh, and look at this, an almost extinct ripper, a Paul Abbott. His moods are up and down like a bride's nightie. Struth, what a treat, it's a goozer. He's not tame, he's terrified of this net. Look at him scramble. Until next time, you Villa bastards.
We mentioned the fans consultation group. Have you got any questions on them that, listeners also might have?
There's two or three things that jumped out at me. Especially around the makeup of the board was ultimately panned out. You know, I think a lot of people who have any interest in how the club was purchased and how it was possibly financed and the figures who were involved in that will be familiar with Chris Samuelson, who also had some involvement at Reading previously.
Yeah, I mean, that was the reason why this question was in there, essentially because of the Samuelson connection and where he was kind of popping up everywhere. And the answer, maybe the question wasn't direct enough, because the initial answer didn't really reference him. It just said, this is the board now, you know, this is how it is. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, while we were waiting for these minutes, Dr. Tony came out with a tweet essentially saying that Chris Samuelson has never had anything to do with Villa and hasn't been a director, which was obviously against him appearing on the website as a director, mm-hmm. him appearing in Company's House as a director with multiple entries and also Recon Sports, and also popping up in India as the head of global development for Recon Sports when they were meeting and greeting and setting up an academy. So, you know, I contacted the club on behalf of the group and essentially said, look, can't have a question asked and you can't just not reference Chris Samuelson, because this is, you know, it's essentially an elephant in the room, and if you want transparency, you know, it should be kind of cleared up. But I mean, they've just essentially said he was, what we got back was what was actually, you know, added to the minutes is how you see it.
Yeah,
but I think it's a deeper thing. I mean, it's I think it's just big business in terms of buying something, moving money around, which obviously is Chris Samuelson's speciality, mm-hmm. basically getting the best deal monetary wise in terms of tax and
We'll ultimately we'll never know. I think the question in my mind was why did someone with such prominence, and he was used prominently in the takeover and during that transaction. He was in some of the photos. He was, you know, his name's on the back of the shirts when they're in the dressing room.
He appears
on Company's House. Yeah, we know from Wyness is coming on and off the books at Company's House that can be procedural, but why does he suddenly completely disappear? And why does a man who, like you say, was head of Recon's sports development group in India 6 weeks ago suddenly have, because this is a stated thing as well, he's got no stated further involvement with Recon Group either.
Yeah.
So either we're missing something or that's a huge about turn. I don't think we'll hear anything either way. Ultimately, Tony's may take the view that actually it's none of our business, and I suppose he's got a point, but it's intriguing how a figure who was so prominent in all of this, you know, I wonder whether, I think the financing element was part of it, and that was the bit that really, I guess, is behind the scenes, but actually he was quite a visible figure as well.
But I don't understand why he's put forward as a figurehead. That's just odd. It's, as you said, it's something that probably won't be answered, but whether it's procedural or there was a falling out, but I think I could never see him in it for the long haul, I don't think. I think it's something that he taught them the ropes and certain aspects, and that's, you know, that's one thing, the whole idea of building a kind of an international setup in the way that, for example, Manchester City have, and where they have stakes in various clubs around the world, and, you know, actually a big stake in, for example, New York City, mm-hmm. is you can, let's say, get around and use it as leverage in terms of the financial fair play system, where you can kind of loan players between teams, and, you know, we won't go into detail here, but it adds a bit more flexibility to work the financial fair play rules. So I'm sure Samuelson kind of helped them set up that infrastructure there as well. Anyway, anything else?
The mention of Dr. Tony's aspiration to make Villa Park up to 80,000 seats was quite interesting, I thought.
It's an example of his undoubted optimism and some of the big positive statements that he's made already, like top three in the world, Champions League.
Hugely ambitious, hugely positive. I do wonder that, I mean, based upon the fact that he bought us largely off the back of seeing the activity and the fans against Newcastle last season, maybe he's just imagining 80,000 people hurling sex toys at visiting Geordies in years to come. You know, this guy's got big aspirations.
I don't know if that's his prime motivation. But no, I actually asked him the question. I wanted to establish what would be the kicker for the development of the North Stand, and what would he want to see first in terms of whether it's on the pitch or in the stands, in terms of the amount of season tickets, etc., etc. And I think I explained before in a previous podcast that it didn't seem to be linked to that. It was linked to more of development, potential development linked into that. So whether it would be like, I don't know, like a hotel group or something, that we're talking about the North Stand being more than just a stand and offices for Villa. It's incorporating some other, whether it's business or kind of recreational elements to, you know, essentially make money.
Well, you look at how other clubs do it, and the glaring fact is, unless you're going to Villa Park on a match day, you have little or no reason to go to Villa Park, do you? That's exactly the point. You know, we were laughing a few weeks ago about Tony doing his walk around outside Luton's ground before the Villa Cup game. Well, yeah. How many people are going for little walkies around Aston?
Yeah.
it's just not the case, is it? You need a reason, a safe and an enjoyable reason to go there. And as you've mentioned in a previous podcast, that will invariably involve some sort of commercial leisure investment.
Yeah, I always thought they could make more of the history and link up Aston Hall a bit more. And because before, you know, when I was a kid coming to Villa Park, I didn't even know about Aston Hall, because I would come a different direction, and then once I walked past it, and I was like, wow, this is like, you know, it kind of adds to that historical feel of the club and why it's not really more integrated openly and connected. Because after all, you know, the Holts who lived there, they were the ones that sold the ground for the club to be developed on.
It's a bizarre thing that, like a lot of things, we don't nearly celebrate our history and our connection to the local area enough. And for so long, we've been such an insular football club that, you know, even Lerner renovating a pub, a historic pub, was a huge thing. And it should never have been allowed to fall into such decay. Yeah, and that's exactly the point. And things like Aston Hall, I mean, it's literally within a couple of hundred yards of the front of the Holt, the steps of the Holt. Yeah, like you say, you know, maybe three quarters of the ground would be oblivious to it.
Yeah. No, it's there's definitely some just small-time insular thinking being going on at that club for, you know, more than a decade or two.
Absolutely.
But it was quite funny because I mentioned there was plans for a 50,000 capacity stadium, and then he said, oh, maybe 60, maybe 80. Without, you know, breaking stride. But
you're
a
so
lot
small-minded, that's your trouble.
Yeah,
just 50? No, just 50?
Just limited. 80? 100? It will buy Aston Hall and we'll turn it into part of the stand. So it will turn full circle. Villa Park will own Aston Hall.
Villa by candlelight. That's one of their things, isn't it? Rule nothing out.
Sorry, anything else?
Yeah, the other strange thing that jumped out was the company that recruits stewards for Villa Park, and they advert on Facebook that there was no experience necessary, which not only does it make you go, what? But also it sort of, some of the issues that were experienced last season makes you go, ah, I can see why that came about now.
That was something I'd been meaning to write about for a long time, and I've got screen grabs of the Facebook of this company, and you just didn't get around to it. So it was I've brought it up a couple of times in meetings, and I brought it up this time, and essentially said, look, they're advertising for no experience, and all the issues and problems we had last season and seasons before that, and you're telling me that you don't need a certain, you know, security certificate, and you don't need previous training to steward a football game, where it's not like stewarding a rock concert or a car show or whatever, because there's this emotional element there. There's this tribal element where people's emotions get the better of themselves, and, you know, things can happen, which potentially somebody who's not experienced, who's just there to earn the cash, don't really know what they're getting themselves into. And you know, basically I proposed, I said, look, there should be minimum some kind of Aston Villa training where if you come in and the external security steward company are happy, you know, that you're fit for this job, that when you turn up at Villa Park, Aston Villa walk you through some of the key issues that you may encounter. So at least there is some kind of, let's say, football crowd training implemented, and maybe Aston Villa can give something to this Spears Worldwide agency to actually incorporate into their training of the no experience staff. Because it is bizarre, and it's just opening up potential problems, as we've seen, from stewards rugby tackling kids with learner out A3 sheets and ridiculous things like that. Trying to steal banners off.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Fans as well. Because, I mean, some stewards are like diehard fans and they've done their job for years.
Yeah.
And they get thrown in the same bracket as the people that just come in for the first time. And, you know, it's not necessarily their fault because they don't know what they're letting themselves in for. I mean, it was quite funny watching all these stewards at the Newcastle game because
yes. They didn't have a clue, did they? No.
They provided, was it 350? There was over 350 external stewards. And watching them just staring at a ground of inflatable cocks and bananas and dolphins and wondering what the hell they're going to do.
It was ridiculous. Most of them, I remember, like, they formed like a ring of steel around the front of the halt end where they allocated a number of them to scoop up the inflatable penises, cock and balls and various other sex inflatables. And you just think, They don't get it. And it links into that plonker who was, you know, all the bed sheets being wrestled off people. And it makes us look small time. And for the sake of investing a bit of time and money in people, ultimately it makes people safer. You know, that's actually their purpose for being there, let's not forget. But actually, yeah, they'll be able to exercise some common sense when they're in the ground. I mean, we're lucky where we sit. We have a guy who's been the steward there for as long as, you know, since I've been going as a young kid with my dad. But you can see it creeping in all around the ground where people actually have no understanding of the club either, and that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. I don't think they were it looked like the inflatables were completely a big surprise, so it didn't look like there was a briefing of what might happen because it was, you know, it was pretty much advertised the whole week.
You're going to be pelted with... Yeah. And Summers's interior is going to be thrown.
Although, to be fair, I think, I mean, it was a very enjoyable game because I think there was more inflatable carnage than I think most fans imagined there would be. And once the load was shot after, like, you know, let's say the first 10 minutes, the fact that people had kept some in reserve, and it was organised that way as well, for the 74th minute was hilarious. Cause,
we had stamina.
Because the stewards, I think, were, okay, yeah, very funny, yeah, that's all good, right, clear them out, let's get out, you know, get them off the pitch. And then, you know, there's a couple of waves at least to come. We should do more than that, and I know it's not going to be popular to say this, but I encourage more inflatable like two or three times during each game.
Yes, long waves. And
if you want to know why Newcastle didn't win that game, it's because of inflatable power just putting them off, breaking up their rhythm. So the fans got the point there for Villa. It was a sensational performance in my book.
It was.
Let's just quickly talk about Villa's start to the season thus far. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've mentioned before we've had the last three good seasons where we've come second twice in the top tier, and when we got promoted from this wretched league that we find ourselves in now. Mm-hmm. We started off without winning in the first four games. I think we've actually got more points now, despite our current predicament, than we did in successful seasons. So what I'm saying is it's obviously a marathon rather than a sprint, but based on the first 45 minutes, we would have been 1-3, drawn 2, lost none. So I think one of the listeners, Neil Williams, posed on Facebook was, what do you put this failure to keep leads down to? And I think what we can link into this is, has there been any transfers coming in since we last played that are pretty much going to solve this specific problem? What do you think?
Time will tell.
Oh, come on, let's be more positive than that.
I think we I think I'd be concerned if we hadn't acted as we had done in the transfer window. We've spoken in the previous episodes how there are obvious areas where we were short. What I do think has been impressive, we've gone about our business, we've seen where the deficiencies are, and we seem to have gone out and got the best that we can that's available. Money's clearly, I'm not going to say it's been no object, but it clearly hasn't been a barrier to us getting who we want to get.
But I mean, specifically to the problem, I'm thinking more of, there's a bit more solidity in the midfield. For example, Jedinak and Tshibola, when he's fighting fit, to actually give us a bit of resistance and durability in the second half. And also, we've got a bit more pace now up top to become more of a counter-attacking threat. So when we're under the cosh, like we have been in the second half of a few games, now teams will be a bit more wary.
Yeah, I think we've previously spoke about not having that plan B. Well, that's broadly been because we haven't had any new personnel to swap or to make like-for-like changes. I think the difference that hopefully we'll see at the weekend at Forest and then the subsequent game at Brentford is that we've got the ability to roll on, roll off new, fresh, quality footballers, you know.
I wouldn't say quality with a capital Q, but one thing we do have now, and I'm not really judging it as top quality players, but we do have two players in every position.
Yeah. We definitely needed that.
So there's a bit more depth now. I still think in January we'll get a few more faces in just to give us a bit more quality in that depth. Because we're still, you know, African nations, and if there's a couple of injuries here and there around that time, then, you know, we may be stretched a little bit.
Yeah, I think a couple of signings will be quite important in January, a Cup of Nations being the obvious one. But what you don't want to be doing is coming to a point in the season where you want to be, you know, kind of like the Man United syndrome, isn't it, really, where you build momentum after Christmas and no one can deal with you. That's what you want. You don't want that to break down because you lose a key player and you don't have anyone remotely good enough to substitute them, you know.
Talking about building momentum, let's jump on to the next games. I mean, we're kind of blessed that we have actually two home games in a short period of time.
Yeah.
So we're not having to travel anywhere with any away, you know, away trips. So the team, essentially, when it gets any of those players that come back from international duty, they are in the kind of the Villa hub over the next week. And so they can focus. Now's the time for back-to-back wins, if you ask me. Now's the time to get this party started, because 6 points, and that will get us up and running for real, and then we can look forward and just, you know, the start is, as we've mentioned before, just an extension of pre-season, really.
Yep, it's simple, really. I think we desperately need to use this as a bit of a springboard. I don't think it's make or break yet, but off the back of the defeat at Bristol, this is a great opportunity to seize. I think it was kind of Nottingham Forest to sign Nicholas Bentner just for our, just for the upcoming game.
Yeah, he's not going to be ready though, just yet, unfortunately.
Oh, well.
Also, they got rid of Oliver Burke,
their winger, to
Leipzig for $13 million, which is currently it's pipped Ross McCormack as the leading championship transfer, unless Jonathan Codger, JK, gets us promoted, and then he becomes the number one championship buy at $15 million, and he would have gone up $13 million in value within the space of a season.
Serious money. I do think it's a great chance this Saturday to new signings, new faces, big home crowd, proper game of football. This is a proper fixture as well. I do like this fixture. Two European championships. I mean, it's a great shame we're both in the championship, but these are two great names.
Forest, I don't think. I mean, they've had a couple of decent wins this season, but because they've lost Burke, and obviously Bentner isn't going to get a start just yet, they're there for the taking. And Brentford, although they're pretty nifty at home at the moment, haven't had a point away from home in their two games, and they actually got beat away to Rotherham as well. And you know, you saw that how easily we kind of dispatched them.
Yeah, well, we've got to find our ruthless streak, haven't we? And this may come from having, you know, this is a newly assembled team. It may start to come together in the next days and weeks, really. If there is a bit of a concern off the back of the international break that you know, Grealish was obviously nursing a knock, and I couldn't quite believe, I know Jedinak's carrying an injury, but I couldn't believe the flight times that he would have had to have done, and playing in the heat that he's been playing in. So there are little things to factor in that maybe other sides won't have to.
And the African nations players as well. I mean, but no, there's a big difference between European international players and the two-hour flight or the Eurostar compared to people who are flying to either Australia, Asia, or Africa, or America for that sake.
Well, Jedinak's been out to Australia, back out to the UAE, and I think it was between 35 and 40 degrees when he was playing, and that's before he's negotiated a flight back.
That's him out for the rest of the season.
the Brett Holman syndrome strikes.
God, I wish they would look at the international fixture list before they bought these players.
No.
It's called forward planning, God damn it.
So we look forward to Jedinak announcing his international retirement, please.
Maybe we should get a petition going for that.
By the beard of Zeus.
By the beard of Zeus, you are retired. So, 6 points. Never make predictions on a podcast because they become easily sampled by the opposition podcast.
The question is if we're not going to start winning now, when are we going to start winning? You know, we need to start building some momentum, and I can't remember the last time we won two games back to back, to be honest, but no time like the present.
If Villa don't beat Nottingham Forest or Brentford, if somebody out there, if one of the listeners could just tweet Dr. Tony that very same question, when are we going to start winning? Please. That would be much appreciated.
Tony meets Villa fans on Twitter.
Tony is a selfish man, ruining another man's career to benefit himself. Shame on you, Tony. Free Joe Bennett.
If a man's career is built by destroying the club's worth, yes, I'll be very selfish to stand on the club's side.
Samuelson has left Recon and Villa. Didn't Dumb and Dumber see own the club?
No more rumours. Chris and the Sockfin helped the takeover. We paid for service. Never was related to Recon.
Tony, this idiot you're replying to has been against you from day one.
I've just blocked him again. Wasting my time. If he has one more rumour, we'll have legal department go for him.
Tony, we need this number 9 you raved about last week. Where is he?
I didn't say we'd done. I said it would be most difficult one, and I've been working hard on it.
Tony, what's going to happen with the African Cup of Nations? We're going to lose our main forward.
We've got a plan for this. We'll get several loans and halves in Zinjan. Don't worry about it.
Unless a player comes in who excites as much as Traore did, then I'll have to return my season tickets.
Tom, I think you bought tickets to watch a team with spirit fighting, not to watch someone call talents on bench.
Tony, how do you have time to run Villa and Recon?
After the game and transfer deal's done, I'll have to go back to China and to do US Asia to run all the Recon business. Oh.
We'll round it up with the 5 reasons to be cheerful as the Villa fans, because we always like to leave the show in a positive glow of optimism. Number 1... I'm going to say, well, the international break is over. And hopefully, in a couple of days at least, I won't have to read any more articles. Well, I don't read them, but nobody will have to read any articles on Big Sam and the new English revolution. I do like the fact that the FA have now backed down from their claim that they're going to win the World Cup in, is it 2022 or whenever Qatar is... That was never going to happen anyway, so no need to back down.
Relax. There's no risk. There's no risk with...
Did you bother watching England? I mean, I gave up that qualifiers and friendlies. I can't do it anymore. It's just a kind of a waste of 90 minutes. No disrespect to anybody who travels to see them, because that's a different story, but to watch them on TV...
Well, I feel... No. I've... I tolerated as much as I could of it. I feel sorry for people who do follow England. I know why they do. I get why they do. But we've become such an insipid team to watch, and we're so predictable, aren't they? And it was, yeah, it was left so late, and it was for...
Yeah, it's just that thing where these players have... I don't know, it used to be... I mean, it's changed dramatically, this kind of... It was used to be a real big honour, and the whole... The idea of getting a cap, England cap, was kind of heralded as kind of a big thing, and even as a kid, as a supporter, you were like, you know, kind of excited just to see a picture of these little caps with the little tassels on the top. But now it's just a platform for getting better endorsement deals and raising your profile. And, you know, you've seen it when Villa players break into the English setup, suddenly their heads turned and they're disappearing because they're hearing about what, you know, their teammates are getting paid, and, you know, off they disappear to City, Liverpool, or, you know, United.
Bit of a problem with watching England, and it did occur to me during the break that scary similarities to watching Villa in especially the last couple of seasons, that you can't root for many of the players because you don't have any connection to them. You know, they're in different worlds to us now. And actually, do they care really? Not at all. And I'm not saying that even we have this romantic revisionist view. I think of England teams of old all being, you know, men and. lifting World Cups high, and but, you know, wanting to turn out for their country and our country and really give it to them.
Yeah, it's like if you look at the star players now of England. I mean, if you don't have to go that far back to see like Paul Gascoigne, who cried because he knew he was going to miss a game, who fans could identify themselves with him, even though he was like the star player, and you know now. His skills compared to anybody in the team at the moment, poles apart. I mean, it makes me laugh when I think of comparing Cowans with Westwood. It's
chalk and cheese.
It's like comparing Fendi or Gucci to Primark. It's polar opposites. The only players that get away with it, probably in terms of comparing different generations, are your Messis and your Ronaldos. But there's a reason why those two were marketed to, you know, high heaven, is because there's, you know, there's not that many great players around. They're all charlatans. Right, let's move on. Number two, anything?
Two Villa home games in a week, one of which will be under the lights at Villa Park. Brilliant.
What is this big romanticism with under the lights? I mean, if they didn't have the lights, if they didn't have the lights on, it'd be dark.
Oh, it's atmosphere.
No, I tell you what happened. It used to be European nights.
Yeah.
It was midweek European nights, and you didn't even have to go to the game. You could listen to it on the radio, and there was still that kind of palpable atmosphere.
Yeah.
But going to the actual game, it's another thing. And then Villa didn't get into Europe anymore, and it got downgraded to under the lights. And it's like, where did that come from? That just came out of nowhere.
It did.
It's just the marketing department. I mean, I'm being very cynical here, but under the lights, you say those words to me and I'm thinking European football, not some championship game against Brentford. No disrespect.
Listen, you're right. I think it's what we've got. I mean, we were just discussing. It's what we've got. You know, it is Rotterdam to Rotherham, isn't it, in its truest sense? I think...
Okay, I mean, maybe I'm being harsh and I should really work with what we've got.
Listen, if you can't get excited about Brentford coming to town on a Tuesday night with Dean Smith, former Warsaw manager, oh my God, what's wrong with you, man? You've lost your fire within. You've lost your inner Villa spirit. You should close your blog and just
fuck off.
Fire. Or manage England, one or the other.
Yeah, Brentford, speaking of Brentford, they've been selling players. They sold their captain... Jake Bidwell, isn't it? Plays left back.
Yep.
And, you know, he was a young guy as well, and their keeper as well. So, I mean, they're one of the pioneers of the whole Moneyball system, but it seems that the bubble has kind of burst.
Yeah, they've flirted a couple of times with promotion, haven't they? And then there's been a couple of strange managerial changes, and the owner's a bit, you know, maybe it is the Moneyball system. Maybe they take the view that actually they're quite happy where they are, and if they get promoted, they get promoted, but don't get relegated, I imagine, is the
because they got rid of those two players, who, you know, two of their better players, almost without any sentiment. It was almost like, well, they've only got a season left on their contract, out you go. We've just checked the stats, and we've got some replacements already lined up cheaper.
It's interesting they picked Dean Smith from Warsaw, because that's essentially, with respect to Warsaw, that they operate on a similar scale, that Warsaw develop players, sell them.
Yeah.
Try and keep in League One. You know, I've had and had a couple of opportunities to get promoted. Brentford are essentially doing that on a slightly grander scale in the Championship, aren't they?
Sure. Right, let's move on to reason number three. Well, in view of the minutes, finally, the minutes to the fan consultation group meeting, I would say third reason to be cheerful is it's now been a few months and the kind of investment of the club, in not financially, I hasten to add, into the consultation with supporters has been a decent dialogue and, you know, very positive so far in terms of there's no not being really any taboo that, in terms of what you can talk about and what you can't. And it's very open-eared conversation in terms of how to improve this club. But, the shocking thing is, as we've discussed many times, is how it's slipped into such a sorry state. And I think the key word from, you know, meeting Dr. Tony was modernization was something, even Tom Fox said it, that we were about 5 years behind. And, you know, I agree with that in terms of what some Premier League clubs are doing at the moment. And, you know, Dr. Tony's realised that. And I think he's got some easy wins because he's going to make some sound common sense decisions, which will put the club on good footing. But it's good to see that the supporters are being integrated into that process of thinking about how Aston Villa can be a better club, have a better integration into its surroundings, and also just get some ambition back in the club as well. I mean,
absolutely.
When I see people even talking about, well, you know, mid-table will be good this season to establish ourselves, and then, you know, we'll go for promotion next season. It's like, you know, get out of here.
Well, for the first time, I know Tony's a bit out there sometimes, but at least he's single-minded in wanting to be the best at something. And he's made his own money. I always wondered the thing with Lerner was he inherited his wealth. So, yeah, did he ever have the drive?
It is a big difference. You know, psychologically, there is this kind of, you have this feeling of entitlement. And that doesn't really equate to proper graft because you've never had to really graft to survive.
Well, Tony's inherited an absolute mess in some areas. I mean, you're just talking about some things there that they weren't just operated in an outdated manner. They were operated in a really parochial. I remember Tom Fox describing some of the things at the Trust AGM as like a corner shop. Well,
yeah.
You know, there's still question marks as to why, you know, even in his time there, he didn't deal with it. But they extend into our past, into years and years of us just ticking over and trading off.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Ellis has a lot of, you know, responsibility for that as well. But, it, you know, Lerner, he became an owner because he just wanted to own a club.
Aston Villa.
He didn't want to run and make something of this club and make it the best and bring it up. He was just hoping it would happen.
It was all about, you know, his bizarre statements, and he was interested in, you know, the mural on the front of the Holt End is a fantastic thing to look at and to admire and to say, isn't that, you know, it's impressive, but it doesn't improve us as a football club. You know, our purpose for being is to win football matches, and it didn't improve that. Improved the look of the Holt End.
Yeah. Didn't know how to run a club to be successful. There was no ideas. There was no direct connection, which is, you know, obviously the good thing about Dr. Tony is he has been present, but not in just to be seen. He's here to sort it out. And there's a big difference to be just watching a game and, you know, keeping fans happy, just turning up to watch games, because to a lot of fans, that's enough. But he's not here just to be a bit of decoration for Villa Park. He's here to actually, you know, get down to business. So what are we on for? Give me something.
Codger goal for the Ivory Coast was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It's either that or the Tonef strike against Luxembourg for goal of the season, I think.
Well, could you imagine such a thing just a week ago having occurred?
So that was a positive sign.
I was just happy he didn't break a leg, come back with an injury. You know, wasn't Salifu shot at when he was with Togo? You know, all this sort of... None of that happened. He's coming home. He's going to play for us.
Yeah, no, it happened to Amavi. He went off on international duty, and that's where he picked up his injury as well.
He got that horrendous knee injury, didn't he?
So, yeah. So, I mean, just very quickly, Forest, Villa Park, Sunday. Who are you most looking forward to seeing of the new signings since you last went to Villa Park?
Oh, difficult question. I'm looking forward to seeing Jedinak on home soil.
I'm going for the Codge, man. I want to see JK. He should score. That's if you want to bet on anything this weekend, he's going to score. If he's still awake after he's got back from his flight from, was it a home game in the Ivory Coast? I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
We need one more, number five. Reason to be cheerful. Not necessarily one from the fans' point of view, but I think Di Matteo is pretty cheerful at the moment because he's got pretty much, give or take, his preferences and his lists of strikers, you know, midfielders, etc. I think he's got, if you asked him, if you give him the list of players he's got now, as soon as he took the job, as those were the ones he was going to get in, I think he'd be pretty happy with that. And he's probably a little bit happy that also Tony's off in China to give him a bit of respite because you know how it is when you have a job and the boss is out for the afternoon. It's a more relaxing afternoon as a worker.
So, yeah, but with Tony, you never know when he's going to arrive, do you? At a moment's notice, the Tony chopper will... You know, land in the middle of Villa Park.
You're actually onto something there, because that fan consultancy group meeting, he wasn't billed to be at that. He came in 10 minutes into the actual meeting. We suspected he would be there because obviously he was at Villa Park.
I imagine Tony will appear sporadically in, I don't know, Brian Clough style training gear on the pitch at Bodymore, you know, G-ing the guys on, and he'll be running out with the players. He wants full investment in this, and I think if the notion of him being back in charge, he'll be like a kid at Christmas. He won't get nothing done at work. He'll be constantly on the app.
One thing I've liked about him is he's, and we know they looked at other, his group looked at other clubs in the lead up, you know, let's say a year lead up to buying Villa, and he has a very good study because he knows the players and he's,
yeah,
read about the history and like the historical players, and he's really invested himself into it in terms of learning and making the effort, so he's knowledgeable about it.
I mean, do you believe the claim that he said he was a fan before he bought the club?
No, I never believe any of that rubbish.
No, you don't think that?
It's up there with when a player signs and they say, oh, you know, historical club, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, I've always wanted to play for a big... It's a big club, it's historical, blah, blah. I mean, why does every player say this? Because
it's a spiel.
But no, I mean, what's he going to say? I have no interest in Aston Villa, so that's why I bought it. But he's as I said, he's a quick study, and everybody believes he's a big fan now. Bigger fan than you, Dan. He's been going to Villa Park for 40 years. He saw them when they were in the old Division 3. That's what he's been telling people. That's what he was saying at this meeting.
It was in my dreams, but I was there.
So that brings us to the end of this episode. Don't forget, if you're listening on iTunes, give it a review, preferably 5 stars, where you can just give it 5 stars, then you can review it in any which way you want. It just helps boost its profile and get it out there to more villains so they're not missing out. Also, you know, give the SoundCloud a like. And also subscribe there, and also on all the various other different formats. Because if you subscribed, you get a notification straight away when a new one pops up. So until the next episode, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.